So good morning. You know, you dare not sing a note after that. It's just foolhardy. But I have to say, freedom, oh, freedom, oh, freedom over me. And before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. It is such an honor and a privilege to be with you this morning. This is the first time that I've been at Unity, and it's so interesting because for many years I was a member of the Unity Fellowship of Christ Church. And I would say that I'm a member of Unity. Oh, you mean the one on the Upper West Side? No, the one in East New York. And it just kind of went on like that for years. So there were these parallel Unity churches going on. And it's just so wonderful to be in this space, to be in this sweet spirit, and in this very sweet community. I want to thank Reverend Britt Hall for inviting me to come. I know that there are many members of the One Spirit family in the congregation today. So would you just stand so that we can acknowledge you? Classmates and teachers, thank you so much for being here. I also have to acknowledge that I have a few friends in the audience, people that I've known for the better part of 20, almost 30 years. So my friend Sheila, please stand. I see Melinda there. And so you have to save the last for least. My mother is here, Mrs. Joyce Fowler, so would you please stand? No one in her church knows she's here. And don't tell anybody. The message for today I call The Myth of Freedom, and I have been working on this series of sermons called The Myth of, and then a theme gets kind of put in there. So over the last couple of years, there have probably been about 14 different sermons at least, but just quickly how this came to be. So we were having dinner, a friend of mine and I, four friends, and one was sharing the story of her parents who were first-generation immigrants from Jamaica and how they had toiled and struggled and kind of, you know, made the American dream happen in New York beyond all obstacles, and I thought I could hear violins playing in the background. And what's interesting was that as we began to dig a little and just ask some questions, something a little bit bigger happened. So it wasn't just that they had come from Jamaica, but both of them were educated. And when they got here, they didn't have to find a place to live because they actually came and stayed with family and friends until they found jobs. And then they found these jobs and good jobs and saved money, and then some people gave them some money for the down payment toward their house. And we don't want to take anything away from their experience, but there's something missing when we don't tell the whole story. See, there's this experience that we have where it's good enough to tell kind of the Disney version of what happened. And what I'm suggesting and what Spirit has me to understand is that there is so much more power in telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about any experience in our lives that actually not only empowers us, but is food for the people around us. Because we've had centuries now of looking good. And what we have is the result of centuries of looking good and fear and malfeasance and just disrespect for one another. So perhaps, maybe, there's an opportunity for us to first on an individual level, begin to explore what are the myths that we've created for our lives that yet keep us enslaved, not fully experiencing freedom, but also enslave the people around us. Yeah, this isn't going to be one of those jump up and down sermons. I like to go to the gospel according to Merriam and Webster when exploring these topics, because one of the things that I find, and you may find this as well, is that, you know, we use words a lot, and often we are using them incorrectly or not using them in the fullness of what the definition is. So when we look at the definition of freedom, it says the quality or state of being free, which just on the face of it is like, that doesn't really give me a whole lot to work with. Not completely inspired by that definition. But it goes on to say, the quality or state of being free as the absence of necessity, coercion, or constraint in choice or action. I want to read that again. The quality or state of being free as the absence of necessity, coercion, or constraint in choice or action. So something that, of course, you want to start thinking about for yourself is, are there any places in your life that are being dictated by necessity, coercion, or constraint? Because what I'm going to suggest to you is that that's a place in your life where you're really not free. You may be making it. You may be dealing with it as best it is. But that thing has a hold on you that doesn't allow you to be the full spiritual self that you really know yourself to be. And it occurs as something that's weird. Like, why can't I be different with my sister? I love everybody, but she gets on my last nerve. I love my work, but if that man comes in my office one more time and asks me for that thing one more time, I'm going to lose all my religion. Right now. So this first myth is that freedom isn't preceded by enslavement. Somehow we've got it kind of twisted that if we are somehow caught up with something, that it's not tied to some very real experience of being enslaved. That it just kind of happened, or it happened to you. And it happened to you because maybe this connection that you say you have between you and the divine is not really as strong as you think it is. Or where it usually happens is we start doubting that we are truly connected to the divine. The divine is fine, but we're all broken to pieces and can't actually access the divine. Consider this, going back to the gospel according to Merriam-Webster. When we look at the definition for slavery, it says the state of being a slave, the practice of owning slaves. But the full definition talks about drudgery and toil, submission to a dominating influence. So just consider for yourself, what's the dominating influence that's got a hold of you, that has you act differently than you know your true self to be? And I want to suggest that it will look like a place where there is a clear presence of either necessity, coercion, or constraint in the choices that you're making. And the one I'm going to tell you that, the one thing that you can know, like this is an area, is, and this one troubles me, is the idea that spirit isn't ready for me to have that yet. If God wanted me to have that, then God would have made a way for that to happen. And I want to suggest that we stop blaming the Spirit and God for things that we have some authority over. Because it actually weakens our relationship to the all-mind and all-knowing when we doubt that it is operating in our highest good all the time. And then what starts to happen is that the blessings of God don't occur as what's supposed to happen. They occur as these miraculous, you know, pools of fire and lightning and thunder. And if you don't see that, then it's like, oh, well, God ain't really did that yet. There's more to it than that. I was enslaved by my finances at one point. And I had a catering business that I had started part-time when I was teaching. Sheila actually asked me to make her some brownies when I saw her this morning. and I left my job at the Board of Education. I was a high school teacher and decided that I wanted to do this full-time. I wanted to be a caterer and bake and all of this kind of stuff. And so I did that for 5 years, and four of those 5 years were financial failure. So I lived in 4 of 5 years in complete financial failure. And just to give you a sense of the kind of financial failure I'm talking about when people call your house at 6:30 in the morning so that they can catch you. Because my automatic thing is that somebody's in trouble because the phone doesn't ring at 6:30 in the morning. And will talk to you any kind of way and call you everything but a child of God, trying to get money that you do not have. That's the kind of financial failure I was in. Afraid to pick up the phone. And what I realized as I was, not as I was in it, because I didn't have the presence of mind at the time, I was coerced. I was completely constrained in the choices that I was making. It was either pay this or pay that, but I could never pay everybody all at the same time and could not pay myself. And what I realized ultimately was that I wasn't a slave to the finances. I wasn't a slave to the money. I was a slave to my pride. I was a slave to my ego, because the decisions that I needed to make, like close this failing business, then meant that I had to also admit that I had failed. And I was not familiar with those three words put together. Not coming out of my mouth. And there was something, if you will, in the community, and I want to share this with you, that there were so many people when I made that decision to leave what, in the African-American experience, in some pockets of it, your good government job that pays you and puts money into a retirement account and lets you actually kind of not work at a particular point based on your contribution, to leave a job like that and actually be working in this experience, there were people in my community who were so happy and so supportive. And somehow I got it fixed in my mind that if I told the truth about this circumstance, then I would be letting them down as much as I was letting myself down. So one of the things that I feel like we have to be mindful of when you find yourself caught up in something is not just what you say about it, it's what the people around you say about it. Because we live inside of joint conversations. We're not operating individually and just happen to show up here once a week. This is a community whose word means something and moves something inside of the spiritual realm. How I got out of that was beginning to tell the truth. A Course in Miracles says that a miracle is actually when you change your mind. There doesn't have to be any swirling pool of fire. There don't have to be any angels descending. There don't have to be any voices speaking to you in the innermost parts of your nighttime sleep. It just has to be when you change your mind. And your mind is directly connected to all mind, to the divine mind. And when you change your mind, it actually aligns with the divine mind like that. So I had to change my mind. I had to decide that I was going to close the business, leave my apartment, put everything in storage, live with other people, and find a job. And those were the decisions that I had to make. And what's interesting is that once I made those decisions, then money started showing up that was never available the 4 years before. And there has to be some way where we actually begin to free ourselves. The second myth is that freedom is free. Is that, you know, and there's a distinction between we are children of God, heir apparent to the universe, and that you don't have to do anything to actually know yourself fully as an heir apparent of the universe. There was this other prophet from the 70s who said, you've got big dreams. You want fame. Well, fame costs. And right here is where you start paying. In what? In sweat. Freedom costs. You want to be free, but freedom costs. And right here, in your spiritual community, is where you start paying. And in a lot of different ways. And the thing that's so interesting about this is that we have so many examples across a variety of traditions of people, our ancestors, who have actually freed themselves. But we see with most of them, it took some action. There's the story of the woman who had an affliction of the blood, a disease of the blood. And she knew and said to herself, if I can just touch the hem of the garment of Jesus, I know I will be made whole. I don't have to have him. He doesn't have to touch me. He doesn't even have to know that I was there. But if I could just. And so she had to make her way, a sick woman, had to make her way through the crowd of people that was surrounding Jesus. And as she approached him, she didn't even have to touch him. And he turned to her and said, daughter, thy faith has made thee whole. It's not me. It's not having to touch me, but your faith and your belief that you could be made whole by interacting with me in some way, that has made you whole. And she went off on her way healed. Our experience with our own enslavement is very much that way. We have to take some action in order to move ourselves out of that space of enslavement. You pay with the truth. You pay with telling the whole story. That if it's a situation with relationship, you tell the part about yourself in that relationship that contributes to it being a toxic relationship. See, nobody wants to be Judas. Everybody wants to be Jesus. Everybody want to be Mary Magdalene, the first one at the tomb. Nobody wants to be doubting Thomas. Nobody wants to be the one that says, show me that you're the risen Savior. Prove to me. We don't want to be that person. We just want to be the good one. And part of how you pay for freedom is that you actually tell the truth about how you're contributing to the Mishigosh. You also pay with sacrifice. And I know that there's certain words that are hard to hear in 2015. Because we hear words like sacrifice, and it kind of snaps people back into some childhood memory of some church that they went to and an experience that was negative. And it's kind of like if we could separate that, let's call it an offering, if that makes it easier to access. But you are going to have to offer something or sacrifice something in order to experience your freedom. What won't you let go of? That is the thing that stands between you and your experience of yourself being free. Because here's the interesting thing. We actually already are free, and we walk around not knowing it. Freedom was paid for in so many different traditions and so many different ways. It's always available, but we don't have the experience of it. Why? Because we're holding on to something that won't let us experience it. You've got to let that go. You pay with your practice. So whatever your practice is, when you wake in the morning, whatever your prayers are, whatever that moment is during the day, whatever your practices are, that's how you pray for your freedom and keep your freedom present for you. Because what happens when your practice gets weak is that you actually then have the experience that it either doesn't work or you are disconnected from God. And God is always present. Always. Always present. Omnipresent. Omniscient. That is the nature of God. Any experience that is not that is with us. God has not gone anywhere. And so your practice is what allows God to be accessible to you all the time, even in the midst of what might be an enslaved situation. And you pay with your service. And so this is the last myth and my last point. Somehow we've got this idea that freedom leaves you carefree. So that you've had this experience, you've been enslaved by these things, and then it's just kind of like this is the experience of life after you've experienced your freedom. And that you should be able to do this for the rest of your life, nonstop, just skipping through life. And then when your freedom doesn't occur like that, then we start saying crazy things to ourselves like, oh, well, I must not be free. It must still have a hold of me. But maybe it's just your expectation that's got a hold of you. What is your freedom for? That's a question to ask. If you're caught up by something that you can't let go of and you get free from it, who is that for? It's not just for you. Your freedom is not just for you. In the history of the United States, those people who were slaves, they did not become free for themselves. They became free so that their children would be free. Women who stood in the suffragist movement and demanded equality and the right to vote, they didn't know if they would get it for themselves. But they fought so their daughters would be able to vote. The people who went to court and said, "It is wrong that I cannot marry this person who I love so dearly and care for them in the way that I saw my parents care for themselves, that is not right." Those people saw a vision and decided that something had to be different, and they didn't just do it for themselves. You see, too often in our enslavement, we are the best story around. We talk about ourselves as if If we stopped drawing breath, the whole planet would explode. And I want to distinguish something, because I'm not saying and I'm not suggesting that you should not interact with yourself as someone who is connected to all divinity. And it's not just about you. Your freedom is for the world. Your freedom is for the world. And it doesn't seem like it most days, because we have this ongoing experience of disconnection, of being disconnected from one another, disconnected from events that are going on in the world. But if you could think about it this way, if you get free, then maybe the people around you will think differently of the actions that they see going on in Iraq and Palestine and Greece, and pick an area that is in turmoil. Because when we are free from the constraints that are directing our choices, then we get to make new choices. We get to say and think new and different things that have an impact not just for us, but for brothers and sisters around the world. That whole thing that God is love and love is for everyone, we're not kidding about that. We're not kidding about that. The greatest of these is love. That's for real. That what we pray for and what we experience and how we set ourselves free has a reverberation around the world that lets other people know that they too can be free, that they can live in some kind of peace. And freedom comes with privilege. And privilege is power. And so one of the things you have to ask yourself, how are you using your privilege? When you got free from that thing, did you look around and see if there were some other people who were freed from the same, who were bound by the same thing? Say, let me go help them get free. That'll be fun. In addition to the skipping. That there are communities of people bound by things that once we're free, we're kind of like, well, I worked on it for a long time. You're going to have to work on it too. This is not a fraternity. This is not a sorority. This is the household of people of faith. And we can do more to actually free our brothers and sisters than we're currently doing. The last thing that I want to say is that freedom requires a couple of things. It requires courage. And that doesn't mean that you're not afraid, but it means in the face of your fear that you actually take action. It requires empathy and understanding. That vision that's co-created between you and the divine, that has to be held and maintained and developed. Freedom requires truth. And freedom requires power, and authentic power, not the kind of power that fades when it meets the first obstacle, but it requires the kind of power that every time you free yourself from something and you help other people free themselves, that is authentic power. That will last. That's the kind of power that even 50 years later, when we hear Dr. King's speech, it still resonates in the same way. That's authentic power. That allows us to move and to be connected to the divine. And finally, going back to this definition of freedom, the absence of necessity, coercion, or constraint in choice or action. Let us work toward that. Let us work toward that individually and collectively. That we live lives and create communities that are free of necessity, coercion, and constraint. I thank you, and let us all thank God. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I am not only grateful that Spirit said, call Mark Fowler to be here today. I'm blessed. 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 In light of everything that Mark just shared, all that truth, take your hand, take your fist, go like this, clench it, clench it. What is it that you are holding on to that's keeping you from being free? And let it go and put that palm face up. And open in the divine, let in the divine to know we are so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have, that I have. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. I am so blessed for all that I am. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I am. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. I am so blessed for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. So blessed.
As we prepare ourselves to move a little deeper in this moment of prayer and reflection, as we reflect on what has been said and what we've sung together, and allow the meaning of the words that we sing to sink deeper into our spirit when we sing, I am so blessed. To reflect on, do we really mean it? I am so blessed. Bring to mind the blessing of life itself. Blessed to be able to draw breath that allows us to sing in our spirit and sing out loud of the gift of life. Blessed for all that I am, all that I have, and all that God is. As we share in the truth of knowing that we are created in the image and likeness of our Creator, which says to me that we are created of God stuff. The attributes, the characteristics. We were created and breathed into us by our Creator is the breath of life. Today, when we reflect on the word rejuvenate, we know the truth that we are gifted with the capability of rejuvenation in mind, body, and spirit. I might think, oh, I have to go on vacation so I can rejuvenate. Oh, I have to go somewhere and just be on a beach or at the park and in nature. I have to unplug so I can rejuvenate. And all that is wonderful. But perhaps you feel the desire to be rejuvenated and you're sitting on a New York City subway train or the Long Island Railroad or Metro North or whatever your mode of transportation is on your way to a place perhaps you don't want to be and want to be rejuvenated. Through choice, we can remember that we are so blessed that we have the capability to choose to take a pause for a prayer cause and breathe in and breathe out in a moment and allow the power and presence that is the only power and presence that is to rejuvenate us in the twinkling of an eye. Wherever you are, in mind, body, and spirit, on this day, at this moment, remember the truth. We are more than our bodies. We are more than our bodies. We are more than our history, more than our memories. We are made in the image and likeness. We have been constructed. We have been formed. We have been built for rejuvenation. It is at our choosing. We are being rebirthed every moment of every day. And when we choose to remember with each inspiration that we are breathing in and breathing out the spirit of the living God, we can know we are blessed and we can take a moment and rest in the rejuvenating power of spirit that inhabits every cell of our being. So let's take a breath, inhale and exhale, and for a moment, feel the gratitude for the power within of rejuvenation.